This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ben Standing's with us every Monday, even when there's not a lot of news to discuss. But Ben's a big college basketball guy, more of an NBA guy. What did you think of Maryland's win?
I mean, you know, that's the shot. I mean, you know, that's the stuff that gets played over and over again for the rest of time. And you know, the fact it would have been great, obviously, if it was any player that made that shot, but the fact that it was the kid who is being projected as like a top 10 pick who has this type of, you know, potential around him that, you know, seems pretty significant. It just, you know, kind of makes it, it's like, even if it's only here for in Maryland for 1 year, that is, you know, a tremendous legacy just off of that one shot. And obviously there's still potentially more to go. So, yeah, I mean, overall though, I mean, that kid on Colorado State, Clifford, that guy is, fantastic, and you know, I mean, I don't know if it's right to say Maryland was fortunate to win, but you know, Colorado State was probably, you know, unfortunate to lose.
Yeah, and I talked a lot about in the open of the show just how, you know, it was so incredibly exciting in the moment, and at the same time, if you've been a lifelong Maryland fan like I have been, and you've been more of a Georgetown guy, I think, over the course of your life, the number of times that that's gone the other way, I mean, it's 4-1 in terms of the count of devastating, soul-crushing losses to euphoric wins. And so to see it go down and to see them move on, it was just really, really good, because that's a dagger three on the other end. You're up two. You can't give up a three. You certainly can't give up a three to their best three-point shooter or one of their best three-point shooters. And it just felt in the moment so Maryland, you know, that they were going to go down again, not just because of this year, Ben. You've got enough of a historic knowledge of this town and of the teams in it. I mean, just because they've lost four times this year, basically at the buzzer in the final 5 seconds, that just would have been a ghastly way for the season to end. But it would have been so Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was always an inferiority complex, whatever, in the ACC days of Duke and Carolina, which was, you know, which made the, you know, getting to the back-to-back Final Fours and being Duke's rival for those couple of years, you know, all the better. And for the record, like, I've been a Maryland fan since the Buck Williams, Albert King days.
Oh, okay.
It's just because I covered, I grew up here. I didn't know you couldn't like them both. And then professionally, I covered Georgetown more just because that's the way things worked out. So I get more linked to that. But yeah, no, I mean, I was at the Final Four, the one they lost to
Duke.
To Duke. But yeah, no, I mean, that, you know, and look, I think also the fact that Kevin Willard had a very interesting week, to say the least. And for him to have been talking the way he was talking, you know, it was good that for him that they were able to pull that one out and not, you know, getting bounced out of the tournament before the Sweet 16 after sort of, like I said, a very interesting week. I don't know what would have happened there, but it definitely does not hurt his stock, whatever that means going forward.
Yeah, it's one of those weird situations where I think people in the know understood what he was doing and were applauding it and want the change and have wanted the change for many, many years. But for the mass majority of people on the outside just paying attention, he needed to win those two games. I mean, that would have been, had they gone down on a three where they had an opportunity to use a foul and didn't use it, that would have really been ugly. I think he's staying. I think I've already said that on the show today, Denton. I think he's staying. I don't know anything for sure. I think some of the things that I've heard would give me a lean that he's staying. Part of that may just be he may not be Villanova's number one. You know, I think the key though is they've got to get basketball at a priority level that most of the fans and alums believe it should be at in terms of the way they operate. So hopefully he'll end up getting it. But terrific game, and yeah, how far can they go?
Well, can I just say, like, you know, independent of Willard's future and all that, but, you know, some of the things he was saying about, like, he couldn't get the extra night in New York and whatever. Like, look, I don't think anybody liked the fact that Maryland left the ACC at the time, specifically because they needed the money, right? I mean, that was, like, the driving factor. And, unfortunately, it also did work out in terms of how college basketball has broken apart, and they're in one of the main conferences now. But if you're going to have done that, Maryland, where's the money? Like, you know, they don't have the I know they're working towards a practice facility, but it took that long for that to happen. And, you know, I don't know exactly what the NIL deal is. Obviously, they got Derek Queen, but, like, where's the money? Like, this should not be happening. I mean, not only, you know, you're in the Big Ten, but that was the reason you left. Fix this problem. It's been a decade now or whatever, right? I mean, whatever it's been.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much in play here. Number one is the money comes from football. You know, so you start there. So the rev share of the $20 million or whatever the cut is from the Big Ten, you know, has to go primarily to football. Secondly, your football program can't draw flies. Even when Mike's got three straight seasons of 8 wins and 3 bowl wins, literally the place is empty on a lot of Saturday afternoons when they play. Also, throw into that the interest in Maryland basketball, you know this market. You have lived it like I have. There was a time in which Maryland was a very difficult ticket to get. You know, it was probably the toughest ticket in town after, you know, Skins tickets or maybe Caps playoff tickets. But it's not that anymore. It hasn't been that for a while, really, since moving into the Big Ten. And there's a lot of, you know, complexity around that conversation. But to your point, they took the money, but when they went to the Big Ten, so, hey, our basketball team should be able to stay in New York an extra night, especially since most of our fans care about basketball a lot more than they care about football.
100%. I mean, the football team, you know, not to go all the way back into history, but like when they took Randy Edsall over Mike Leach, that was like one of those moments like, no, this football team is not interesting enough to the locals. You need to give them extra. You have to give them a reason. So like somebody is there that gets put on the 6 o'clock news shows, or, you know, people in your job, you know, are talking about Maryland in other ways because this coach said stuff that, you know, that needs to happen for that program as much as anybody. But yes, I mean, college basketball, as we all know, has taken a hit. And in this market, I think what the difference is that the people who were like a little more, you know, people who didn't go to Maryland, people who have not been College Park lifers, like they've kind of just faded off because I think the sport has, just not been as interesting. And that's what's missing. And, that's a whole other topic as to what college basketball does. It's definitely frustrating. I mean, I'm mostly emotionally agnostic these days when it comes to rooting for any of the teams just because of my job and I've beaten it out of me. But, like, I know so many of my friends and, like, you who are just, like, you know, they're thrilled with this Sweet 16. But it overall remain incredibly frustrated with how the basketball program gets dealt with.
I had a friend text me this morning, and he just said, God, man, you're so excited about the Sweet 16. My God, have times changed. And it's true. It's not that I'm thrilled to be there and anything else that happens is icing on the cake. I'm not there. I think Maryland can make a run, and I want them to beat Florida and go win the national championship. But there was a stretch of a decade and a half, you know, plus really, where the expectation was the Sweet 16 every year. And you were more about, you know, do we have enough to make a legitimate Final Four run this year? Not that they went to a lot of Final Fours, but they had Final Four caliber teams regularly. Remember, Gary was criticized before he finally made a Final Four because people thought that Sweet 16 was the max you could do with Gary Williams as head coach. He went to like six of them without advancing to an Elite Eight or five of them before he finally did. And then they had a chance certainly in 2001 with a 22-point lead against Duke, and then they came back and won it the next year. But, that's the current reality. The current reality is Maryland's gotten to a point where getting to a Sweet 16 is, I called it a bit of a relief because there is a sense of relief to get out of this weekend because they've had a lot of opportunities. It's not like they haven't been in the tournament. It's not like they haven't had wins in the tournament. I think they had like 9 second round losses to go with the one second round win in 2016. And some of those losses were excruciating. Corey Lucius, Tremaine Waters. But the reality is when you've only been to now, you know, to one Sweet 16 over a 21-year period before yesterday, your thinking starts to change. So there is excitement to be in the Sweet 16. But I want to go further.
And in this era of college basketball, forget the fact that Derrick Queen seems likely to be a one-and-done, you know, top 10 pick, lottery pick, whatever it may be. College basketball in general is a total mess with the transfer portal. So whatever this thing is may be completely different by next year. So exactly. Every year now is just, it's not that you don't want to win every year, but like back in the day, you knew that Steve Blake would be there for 4 years or Drew Nicholas, or you had time to build your team. That's gone. So when you have this team that looks to be as good as Maryland, at least with the starting five, you need to take advantage of that because by next year it could be completely different. And that's, again, one of the unfortunate parts of the sport right now. But in particular, when you have a guy like Queen, and again, go back to that shot, I mean, that's what makes that shot even more, I think, fascinating and is who made it. And you don't get many guys like that. And fortunately, theirs is panning out for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what you heard from Willard, too, the understanding that this isn't about a slow build. This is about, you know, an annual, you know, totally restructuring of your team. And if you don't have the resources to do it the right way, you're at a disadvantage. And he hit the inside straight. You know, he kept Queen for less money than other schools were offering. And he got just enough to get the right mix of players with Miguel Gillespie and Rice. Not to mention, he had a four-year senior center who had opportunities to take more money and go elsewhere last year. So can't count on that every year. You didn't answer the question. How far can they go?
Oh, how far can they go? Well, I mean, obviously, you know, their side of the bracket is in form. So Florida, look, I haven't watched Florida enough to know exactly, but they clearly have been one of the better teams this year. The SEC, pretty crazy. So, you know, I'd leave it up to you to say their chances. What did I see? They're like a 6-point dog. If they're making the shots, you know, obviously for them to make the shots, it sets up the pressure, and that lets them dictate the terms they're not making shots, I mean, obviously, you know, you got to put points up to win, but if they're not making shots and they're not dictating the terms, then that gets to be a lot more complicated. So, you know, again, Florida's really good, but Maryland has those top five guys are pretty special themselves. So, you know, you would think, obviously, Florida is the favorite to win. So, you know, odds are they probably would. But, you know, in college basketball, it's hardly, you know, this is not the back of the day where one or two teams are just so much better than everybody else. So, I think they definitely got a puncher's chance, no doubt.
By the way, if UConn had won Denton and Ben, 30 years later to basically the weekend, Maryland and UConn would have met in the Sweet 16 in the Bay Area. 1995, it was Joe Smith's second year. Maryland played UConn in a Sweet 16 game in Oakland, not San Francisco, because that's where the arena was. The Warriors arena was in Oakland up until a couple of years ago. But they played UConn in that 95 Sweet 16 game. And that was a UConn team with Ray Allen, with Donnie Marshall, who else was on that team? And Maryland lost. And Maryland was favored in that game. They were the higher-seeded team and favored, and that was Joe Smith's final game as a Terp. So they're going back to the Bay Area for the I don't think they've played in San Francisco or Oakland since. I could be wrong about that. Maybe San Jose. I don't know. Thursday night against Florida. All right, any football news from over the weekend with our team? Ben's got his mock draft out, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but anything newsworthy over the weekend?
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Unless I missed something, I don't think so. You know, we talked to a bunch of the players last week, including Debo Samuel, and I think we're pretty much done with that unless they do some other moves here. So, you know, just catching up with those guys. I think the league as a whole, free agency, has really quieted down for sure. You know, probably a lot of teams are waiting to see what's going to happen with the quarterbacks, the Aaron Rodgers and all, and that will not only shape the quarterback market, but also have other teams, you know, be willing to sort of open up the checkbook again and start making moves. But no, I mean, look, I think this team has done what it intended to do, and that is give themselves options in the draft. Pretty much every position, for the most part, has a rotation. And if you said this is what they're doing for week one, maybe it's not the highest end, but, like, you know, the floor is good enough. So, you know, I think they've largely done their job. Still need, you know, a sort of a higher end edge defender would be good, and, you know, you could probably get another corner and some speed on offense. But, you know, by and large, I think they've kind of done most of the stuff, and now, you know, you see if there's anything that shakes out in free agency or just wait for the draft.
All right, Ben's got what version of this draft is this mock 1.0? What is it?
This is the first one I've done, and probably the only full first round I'll have on The Athletic. They throw me a bone every once in a while and let me do these things. So that is up.
All All right, Ben's got his 2025 first round mock draft out. Subscribe to The Athletic, people. It's totally worth it. I'm a subscriber. Follow Ben on Twitter, on X, at Ben Standig. He's got a podcast called Last Man Standig. You can get that wherever you get your podcasts. So I don't want to go through the whole first round. I want people to read it. But let's talk about what you did with Washington in your mock.
Well, you know, this one is, you know, probably a little bit of wish fulfillment in the sense of, you know, with only five picks and the first round falling the way that I have it, where the edge rushers that I would think would be the guys that they would consider there all go right before they pick for the most part. So I have them trading down with Cleveland. Cleveland already takes the quarterback at two with Shedeur Sanders, but you know their current left tackle, I believe, right now is Cornelius Lucas. So, you know, as we saw here for many years, like, you know, that's the stopgap answer. So I had them trading up to get a tackle that fell a little bit, and then for Washington, you know, get a pick. I think right, a pick this year and a pick for next year as well. And you know, I think that's kind of what they need to do. But also, like, when you get to the end of the first, I think the most interesting thing, whether there's a trade or not, is that the more I've been doing this and then looking what some other people are doing, you're seeing a lot more cornerbacks being projected to Washington. And I think that, to me, is a reflection of, like, best player available at a need position, that it just doesn't, you know, again, we could all be wrong, but like at the moment, it's sort of feeling like there's not necessarily going to be a defensive end that is, like, clearly the obvious pick overall, and knowing that that position is deeper and corner is not the most deepest position, that it's, you know, more the idea of them taking corner with that first pick again, whether it's at 29 or in my case dropping down to 33, and then, you know, presumably getting a defensive end in that second round pick. So, you know, I think that is something to keep an eye on. You know, they do need both of those picks, at least in theory, with cornerback. If Marshon Lattimore, you know, plays like he has previously in his career, then they have a stud there. Not to mention Mikey Sanders still look good. Whereas on the defensive line, defensive end, you know, it's a lot of workman-like guys, but there's no obvious, like, upside there, and that's why that's more prominent. But yeah, I think that's something to keep an eye on as we're about a month out. Is that the cornerback? You know, there may be more options there than there will be at edge.
Look, there's what you just described, you know, the edge rushers, the defensive ends they'd be interested in are gone. But this is also a draft that's deep at defensive tackle, and as we've discussed, and you just talked about the Cleveland need, at tackle. What do you think they would do if they got to 29, couldn't trade back, and the best player on their board was a D tackle or a defensive tackle or an offensive tackle?
Well, defensive tackle is a little bit easier, right? Because you're rotating these guys in and out. I mean, you know, they, you know, between Daron Payne, Johnny Newton, Javon Kinlaw, Sheldon Day, you know, Eddie Goldman, like, they, you know, they're pretty well stocked there. So there's really no, like, immediate need. Like, even like last year, like, forget, like, you know, we Fedarian Mathers hadn't shown that much. So Johnny Newton at a minimum was going to be the third guy. And then, you know, that still gets you on the field, you know, 50% of the snaps or more sometimes, or it can be. So this time, though, that'd be a little bit trickier, even though you appreciate the fact that Daron Payne, you know, this could be his last year if he gets the John Allen treatment next offseason. So that's trickier. Tackle's even more complicated because you don't substitute there unless you have, you know, injuries. So you've got Tunsil on the one side. You know, you've got Brandon Coleman. Even if you said, well, just move Coleman to guard, okay, but, you know, but they already have Allegretti and Cosme, and even from a longer-term perspective, I guess Allegretti could be a, you know, second year and a third-year deal. Maybe he's in trouble after next year, but, you know, that gets tough. So that would be more of a challenge. I guess I would have to know, is, like, overwhelmingly the offensive tackle is that much better than anybody else? If it is, then, you know, you take it and you figure it out, but otherwise, I just would be – I don't know how you're going to make that work. And, again, they only have the five picks. So if you're taking a guy who's just flat out not going to play for the most part this year, you know, that's a tougher pill to swallow. But, you know, if the guy is that much better, then, you know, you do it and you go from there.
What do you think they are hoping to get from Daron Payne this year? Or realistically think they'll get? Hoping is the wrong way. Obviously, they're hoping for, you know, a massive season. What do you think they realistically believe they'll get from Daron Payne this year?
Yeah, I mean, I talked about this on not my most recent podcast episode, but the one before that, like, so that it was a sort of stream of consciousness, like, you know, we keep saying, how are they going to, is the defense actually better? I know we've talked about that, you know, hard to say, maybe on the edges there. I don't mean I mean slightly the defensive edges, but like, you know, maybe on some level they're better, but like, it's nothing that dramatic and we'll see. You know, there is one way to get better, and that is Daron Payne plays like he did when he got the contract, because that version has not been on the field for Washington the last couple of years. I mean, he's been fine, but like nothing, you know, the sack totals aren't even close to what they were that breakout year. He's not nearly as, you know, we can go like games it felt like this year without even mentioning him, because other players were, you know, last year was obviously a lot of fun. We didn't have to, like, if Daron Payne was doing what he did last year under the previous regime, I think he's getting a lot more criticism. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just as simple as saying to him, hey, you know, reasonable chance you're going to get released next offseason, so this might be your contract year, so keep that in mind and maybe play like that, because that's what they need. If he could be the guy, if he could be that disruptive presence in the middle, that's the biggest bonus for this defense. That's where you could see things change, especially, you know, now next to Johnny Newton. You're hoping he's obviously going to be a better player after, you know, he missed pretty much all offseason last year because of his foot surgeries. Now he's coming in, you know, fresh for a second season. Like, that's the best scenario for them to really improve. But, you know, other than the 1 year of his career, he's never really had sort of a huge year. I mean, he's been fine. Again, I mean, it's not like he's not been a good player, but they're not paying to be good. They're paying to be a lot more, and, you know, compared to the way people talk about just in the division alone, with Dexter Lawrence and Javon Carter, like, that's not getting discussed in that group. And that's what they're going to need. So I don't know what they expect of him, but that's what they, whatever they need to do, even if it is to say, hey, this might be a contract year, you maybe want to, you know, get going here.
One last one, and I'll let you run. In your mock draft, you had a couple of edges, actually three of them, going right before Washington at 29. You know, who's the guy that fits sort of the type that we know that they're looking for, you know, the RAS score, the leadership, the culture fit, etc.? Is there an edge? Is there a defensive end that could make it into the 20s to early 30s that fits that description?
Yeah. So, you know, the ones right before the two picks right before, Ezarascu, if I'm saying that right, from Boston College.
From BC.
And Pierce, from BC, yeah, and Pierce from Tennessee. Like, putting aside, like, whatever questions you have there, like, these are, you know, pure, like, edge guys, you know, lighter players coming off the perimeter, et cetera. But they're talking about wanting seemingly more of, like, an edge defender, like a bigger defensive end. Somebody's obviously get after the pass rush, but they're trying to slow down the opponent's run game,
right?
And I don't necessarily know that these guys are built for that. I think the two guys who, to me, have stand out in that regard are two guys who are not getting picked or not getting mocked in the first round, and that's Nick Scorton from Texas A&M and Landon Jackson from Arkansas. These guys are, like, considered to be highly competitive. They were both team captains in college. You know, they're athletic. Like, they can do a lot. They're just, you know, being viewed as guys who are not necessarily top 32 picks. And so this is another thing with the trade down. Again, if the public perception is accurate, you know, this is where a trade down could work, because you can, you know, in the second round, you know, a little bit easier to take a guy like that, you know, better value or whatever, while getting somebody that fits what they're looking to do. So I think that's part of the challenge. It just feels like most of the defensive ends that we're talking about this year are guys who are more like those 3-4 outside linebackers, or at least built that way, rather than somebody who's really going to, you know, stand up on the edge and be a force like that. So I think that's the kind of the challenge. I mean, look, you can't get everything you want always. And they, you know, they brought in Javon Kinlaw seemingly to use him some more at edge. So maybe, you know, that becomes the plan in this year. And they hope that one of these lighter defensive ends, you know, puts on weight over time, and, you know, they can improve them as a run defender or what have you. But, and, you know, so maybe it's not as big of a deal for this year, and they can get after the quarterback, which is, you know, I think they still need that. They lost, obviously, Dante Fowler, gave them that last year, and there's no obvious, like, guy to replace that to some degree right now. I mean, Dietrich Weiss, perhaps. But so, you know, I think that to me is kind of the rub. I don't know that they're physically the right fit, but those two other guys, Thornton and Jackson, unless they think that they are worthy of that 29th spot, and, you know, it's all, sometimes we just get caught up in the, somebody's overdrafted, you know, the picking between 29 and 45 is probably, you know, right, you're talking about the same guy for the most part. So that, you know, maybe they think it in those terms, but I think those two guys fit the profile more than some of the ones that I have going in the first round. But that's, you know, that's a broader view versus a very specific one for what Washington might want.
All right, Ben has Azaria Thomas, corner, Florida State, going in the second round after a trade back with the Browns. You can catch his whole first round. He's got three quarterbacks in the first round on The Athletic. Subscribe. Thanks. I'll talk to you later.
Awesome, man. Congrats on the Terps. Way
to
go.
That was a big one. Felt good. Thanks. Appreciate it. Yep. We'll talk to Randolph Childress. He was a hero for Wake Forest and one of the great ACC tournament runs of all time. He's doing a lot of college basketball analysis work. He'll join us next.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.